Good morning, all. From time to time, you know, I suppose most priests do, I get letters and emails from far-flung corners of the world asking for help with information about family members that have been baptized or married or buried here from St. Wolstan's. And they're from people, obviously, researching their family history. It's a very popular pastime these days, as witnessed by the TV series, Who Do You Think You Are? I haven't actually watched many of those programs, but the ones I have seen, there's usually been the odd black sheep, you know, in the ancestry, or colorful character that no one was expecting to find amongst their ancestors. On Friday, in the first chapter of his gospel, we had the results of St. Matthew's research into Jesus's family history, which very much backs up what the prophet Micah said in the first reading there. His origin goes back to the distant past. And boy, what a past it was. I was telling the people on Friday that over 42 generations divided into three parts, we see a real ragbag of saints and sinners, some of whom did really wicked things, like David, King David, who was God's poster boy, who actually arranged the murder of his lover's husband and took her to be his own wife. And I assure you, there are many more dubious characters along the way to make you wonder what God was thinking when he chose those particular people. The first group in the history were the patriarchs, starting with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Jacob was a liar. He lied to his father in order to steal his brother's blessing. Surprisingly, of all the 12 sons of Jacob, it was not Joseph, who, as you know, saved Israel and the world, in fact, from starvation at the time, who was chosen to be the father of David's line, but Judah, his brother, who'd actually sold him into slavery. The second group in the history were the kings, and under David and Solomon, they enjoyed what you might call the high point of the history in the because they were actually in the promised land, which is something that only the patriarchs could only dream about. However, only two of the 14 kings were any good, so Israel was conquered and taken into exile in Babylon. Then there's a third group. We could call the third group, I suppose, the nondescripts. Apart from Joseph and Mary at the very end of the list, there's nothing written about them or known about them except their names. And yet it was these little people who brought about the restoration of their nation, which had been brought to ruins by the rich and powerful before them. In each generation of those 14, their upbeat story is full of joy. It's one of growing expectation of the coming of the Messiah, which climaxes with John the Baptist when he proclaims that the Messiah has indeed come. What we take from this potted history of Jesus' ancestry is that God doesn't always choose the best, the most noble, or most saintly, but those he does choose, good or bad, achieve his purpose only by means of his grace. They're only able to do those things through his grace. And we see that in today's scriptures when God chooses Mary, a lowly woman from the country, who will give birth to the Messiah in Bethlehem, described as the least of the clans of Judah. The question arises then, what does God's way of operating actually mean? Well, the obvious answer is that it's pure gospel or good news. It's good news for the poor, the marginalized, outcast, and anyone who feels undervalued or ignored by the usual way that people evaluate other people. Jesus himself will operate in exactly the same way. And in the light of how we see God works, St. James, in his letter, teaches us to follow his lead by avoiding the use of double standards in the way that we treat people, you know, fawning over the rich and ignoring the poor. It's a message of hope and joy, which, as we know, has attracted many millions over the years to follow the Lord of the dance, wherever they may be and whatever circumstances they may find themselves. And such was the joy at the end of all this of Elizabeth in greeting Mary in today's gospel. You might recall that when the Ark of the Covenant was being taken up to Jerusalem to be installed in the Holy of Holies, King David went absolutely delally. you know, singing, dancing crazily before it all the way, consumed with the joy that God had stayed faithful to his promises. And now in this little vignette that we have this morning, we see the infant John in Elizabeth's womb leaps for joy before Mary, who is the new Ark of the Covenant, carrying the new Holy of Holies, while Elizabeth expresses her own joy that God's promise has once again been fulfilled. The choosing of the least expected, including sinners as well as saints, I think is a great cause of joy for everyone, because it shows that God never, ever writes anyone off. The power of God shows itself in human weakness. We know this because the history of the church is pretty much the same as the history of Israel. We've had our megastars, our great saints, but we've also had our first-class hypocrites. Even today, we know that we too are a ragbag of saints and sinners. So there's no point in trying to prove differently to people who can't accept the church because they see that it's not perfect. I think far from being a discouragement, knowing that we are as weak as everybody else is actually an encouragement, because it shows that God's grace can work in anyone, even people like us.